You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. Welcome along. You're listening to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner, Mike Grenham and Dave Tindall with you. A couple of big events this week with the Open de España on the European Tour and, of course, the Heritage on the PGA Tour. But first of all, the formalities. It's a warm welcome to Mike Grenham. Good afternoon, Mike.
Hi, Dave.
How are you doing, sir?
Good form, yes. Looking forward to this week's events because I bet Augusta didn't go that well, did they?
It wasn't one of those podcasts you'd... it wasn't a golden podcast.
We won't be referring that from... Not for me. It was about the worst major I've ever had, I think. It was a dire.
Dave, how are you, sir? Joining us on Skype, Mr. Tindall.
Yeah, not too bad. Maybe unlike Mike, I always suffer from post majors blues, and I sort of have to sort of kick myself in the head to get going again for the week after. Anyone find that? Anyone
sometimes, but it finished on Friday morning for me.
Extra days to prepare.
Yeah, I missed the cut.
As far as the overall event was concerned, take betting away from it for a second, it really was a wonderful Masters. It provided us with intrigue throughout the 4 days, and Sunday was edge of the seat drama, Mike.
Yeah, it was fantastic, wasn't it, Dave? Just a fantastic event. But what was Jordan Spieth doing on 12? His third shot was just ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, he just had that complete mental meltdown, really.
Yeah.
You consider, for a player of his calibre, and it's possibly the first time in his career that we've seen mental fragility from Jordan Spieth.
Yeah, but he did bounce back, didn't he? He got a couple of birdies coming home, so I don't know whether it was just a mental aberration, but he wasn't playing absolutely out of his skin all week, was he? He got a very good start and kind of was hanging on slightly, but he looked such a certain winner, didn't he, for most of the tournament.
Yeah, let's talk about the winner, Danny Willett, Dave, winning the event, and got a Yorkshire winner of the Masters 2016.
Yorkshire.
It doesn't obviously tell the full tale, but he held his nerve in those closing couple of holes. I think the way the tournament panned out probably helped him, because standing on the 15th tee, I don't think he would have ever expected to be in that position. But a couple of good shots down the stretch and putted brilliantly, and it was a fantastic performance from Willett.
Yeah. When I was doing the in-play, I was saying to Steve Carroll, I was saying, who do you actually trust most to hole a putt out there, apart from Spieth? And it was always Danny Willett. The rest of them, Dustin Johnson, you always expected him, you know, to miss like an 8-footer somewhere. Just everybody you didn't really trust. But every time Danny Willett had a putt, I always thought, this is probably going to go in. Think about it, the more putting is huge, isn't it, at Augusta? It really is. I mean, it props Spieth up completely. I think I saw a stat that... only Spieth and one other player in the top 20 had shot 3 over par rounds. So you take out Spieth's first round, and he was struggling a little bit throughout, to be fair. And without his putter, he probably would have been midfield, wouldn't he?
He mentioned that, didn't he? He said from a ball striking perspective, he had his B-minus game throughout the week.
He did, but one thing that he did do, as I think we've all noticed, is that he was 11 under, wasn't he, on the par fives? When remarkably, Danny Willett was level par. That's just... one of the great rules of Augusta blown apart, isn't it? You know, he was level par and he's finished 5 under, which is fantastic. But Spieth, therefore, rather obviously, was nowhere near. It was 9 over on the 3s and 4s. So that's right, isn't it? Yeah, my master, right there. Yeah, remarkable stuff, wasn't it? Really, you know. And the other one that's gone a little bit is course experience, because this is only Willett's second outing. Like, it was only Spieth's second outing. Spieth nearly won on his debut. Jason Day was second on his first or second run.
Yeah, first run he was.
First run, wasn't it? So it's beginning to... I wonder whether all the TV coverage of all the earlier holes is giving players a bit more of an insight to the court. I don't know. It just seemed that your first or second time round guys are doing a lot better. There's no question about it.
I think that's a definite.
TV coverage, do you think?
I'm not sure.
They're doing better anyway, aren't they?
I think maybe players are preparing more than they used to. For the Masters. That's something we talked about with Bryson DeChambeau in the in the podcast last week, and obviously he started on Thursday and Friday incredibly
well, didn't he?
Played brilliantly. And Danny Willett, that's something I tweeted on Sunday morning. Danny Willett going into the final round was two over for the par fives. For him to be in that position, having Dave played the par five so badly, really, in the opening three rounds, was testament to his ball striking on the threes and fours for the week.
Yeah, I mean, just back to Mike's point as well about you not seeing. I mean, Schwartzel won on his second go as well.
Absolutely, yes.
You can rip up the first time a thing still holds, but certainly a second time player that has got, you know, it's not a negative anymore, is
so
it?
So that's what, three of the last six, is it, or something that, Dave? Yeah.
It's almost a bigger negative to have been there loads of times and got a load of scar tissue by not winning.
Yeah, very possibly.
You'd almost back some young gun to win on his second go ahead of McIlroy, who's just getting beaten up every year now.
Matthew Fitzpatrick for a Sheffield double next year, perhaps?
Possibly.
I mean, he was amazing, wasn't he? But, you know, that's his first go on it. He finished seventh, so I think he looks like he can handle Augusta.
Yeah, very intriguing for next year. Danny Willett, the winner of the Masters this year.
Sorry to interrupt, Dave. You do have to be top 10 after the first round, or at least under par, don't you? You look at the leaderboard. Seven of the first nine were under, at the end of the tournament, were under par after round one.
Yeah.
And either in the top 10 or 11th or 12th, that kind of thing. So it's really important, isn't it, to you know, look at that, Dave. We've got the Masters leaderboard up here, and you know, the finishers, the round ones, it's all red under par, isn't it?
Eight of the top ten,
yeah.
Under par in round number one.
Well, I think you've got 11th and 12th. Nine of the top 12, if you want to put it that way, if you include the ties.
Yeah.
That's so significant, isn't it?
I got told off on Twitter for sort of saying that, saying, where's the romance? But you've got to... Yeah. I was just sort of saying on TV, they just come out, they trot out, oh, anyone could win from 10 back and...
Just doesn't happen, Dave, does it?
No, it doesn't happen.
Nine of the top 12 were under par in the first round, and either they were almost all in the top 10 or just below it. So it's so hard to catch up there, isn't it?
It is. It's a difficult golf course to close on the leaders if you get behind early. Shall we have a look at this week? Because we've got two...
No, let's talk about the Masters.
We've got two big events. I was worried we might do like 25 minutes on the Masters and have like 3 minutes
on
each event.
Well, I've got one last question on it then, boys.
Yep.
Jordan Spieth, does he come back from this quickly?
That's a good question. I'd say it takes time. So I think we see maybe a couple of major championships without Jordan Spieth in the top four or five. Do you think, Dave?
Well, I think it's a bit different to when McIlroy obviously blew it in 2011, then he won the US Open. I think the difference there is, though, McIlroy's was all mental. He was actually playing brilliantly. He just played stupid on the last day. It's not just space sort of mental thing you've got to think about. He's just not playing very well. So if he doesn't immediately win, you can't just say, oh, that's because his head's gone. It's just because he's not playing very well. That's what I think.
Okay, what do you think, Mike?
I think he'll come back. I think Dave's probably more on what I think, in that if he starts playing well again, he'll be mentally good enough to win. But I do get Dave's point that his game is a bit fragile at the moment. It's a bit up and down, isn't it? So... Mm. But the way he puts, he could probably win anywhere, would be kind of my view.
Let's get stuck into this week then. We'll start with the Open España, which is the European Tour event. And Sergio Garcia is the 5-1 favourite here with William Hill. Rafa Cabrera-Bello is in the betting at 12-1. Søren Kjelten, 14s. Andy Sullivan, 16-1. Juuse Lauten is 20s. Martin Kaymer, 25s. Alejandro Canizares is 28-1. And it's 33s bar. Superb stuff to have Valderrama back on the schedule.
Must be somewhere that Dave Tindall's been, this, isn't it? Am I right?
I've been there, yeah.
We knew it, didn't we?
What's it like, Dave? Because it's an iconic classic golf course, this one.
Oh, it's a lovely piece of property, but it is very, very... You're very, very aware of the tree lines. I think of all the courses I've been to, I think the trees are pinched in closer here than anywhere else. So even though you normally, well, most of us probably pour a bit of scorn on driving accuracy because, you know, you hit a poor shot, you've still got three shots to recover it. On here, if you're missing it, you are in trouble. Even in the fairway, you know, get it in the wrong bit of the fairway, you've got to bend it round trees. So you definitely want to be hitting it straight.
In a similar way to Harbortown, which is the host course for the Heritage, which we'll we'll talk about
similar
very similar credentials. And this course has hosted some of the biggest events on the European Tour, hasn't it? Including the 1997 Ryder Cup. Is it that long ago? It is that long ago.
Genuinely, I didn't realise that.
That was when Constantino Rocco beat Tiger Woods, wasn't it, in the singles and made himself a hero because they were leading by a long way, weren't they, Europe, in that Ryder Cup? And then America came charging back Rocco beat Woods 4-2. It's an event that I've read about, but I don't actually remember very well.
Time flies. So yeah, I was only five when that was on. It was quite a good event.
Dave, you
were 1 year up to win that, you know.
You what, sorry, Dave?
Europe were 3-1 to win that tournament.
Were they really?
It was a ridiculously massive prize because I just thought, there's no way Seve will allow them to lose. I mean, you know, and just sheer force of personality.
Yeah, carried them over the line almost, It's a great course from what we see on telly, Dave, and you've clearly backed that up from your own experiences. So great to have European Tour back on mainland Europe and an iconic course as well.
I've got one pick for the event, Mike.
Me too, Dave. Shall I go first? I haven't got a lot to say on this other than it's Richie Ramsey is my pick. Plays very well in Spain. Hasn't been out a lot this year so far. Was playing reasonably well in the Middle East. He was 17th in Dubai at the back end of last year, 16th in Abu Dhabi, then 41st in Qatar. Then missed the cut in the Dubai Desert Classic. So it hasn't been out a lot, but was actually third in this event in 2011 at this course. Has good form on Spanish courses generally, and he's just his type of course. You know, he's accurate, he's just a ball striker, isn't he? So I'm hoping he's had a little bit of time to prepare. I've had a look at his Twitter handle, and he's been out in Spain, it looks like, for quite a few days preparing, which is always reassuring, rather than charging back from Augusta, Georgia. So I'm hoping that Richie Ramsey, it's a little bit speculative, I have to admit, because of lack of a recent sighting, but at 66-1, I think this is just the kind of course where he can thrive, and he does have that third in the event in 2011. Last time it was here, I think, wasn't it?
It was in the Andalusia Masters.
Yes. Sorry, you're right. The last time they played a tournament here. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going with... I'd like to... A few Frenchmen this week. They were definitely on my radar.
That's a little bit of a revelation, dear.
Julian Kane was one of them, but he's maybe a little bit short of 40s.
Gregory Havre.
That's the one that I'm going for, Dave.
Oh, good, because I was absolutely on the borderline. I wanted 80s, I think, but that's great. You're putting him up. You go on.
Yeah, I like him. I think he just fits for this venue. Gregory Havre, yeah. Arrow straight, driver of the golf ball. He sits 13th in driving accuracy this season, having been fourth at the end of last season. And he's playing good golf as well, or he was when he was last out. His two recent starts have been a 10th place finish in Thailand, followed by a 6th place finish in India. It has been a long time since he's won, there's that caveat. He's not won since 2008 when triumphing at Glen Eagles, but he's made his last four cuts here. Two starts at the course in the Andalusia Masters yielded top 25 finishes, with a 6th place finish in that tournament that Ramsey finished third in in 2011. I think he's just a good fit around here.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a good each way price. I think as you said, his winning days seem to be, well, I don't know if they're over, but they're few and far between when he does. We could certainly run into a place, and I just think he's a sort of steady Eddie, isn't he? Exactly what you want. Last three events where there has been a driving accuracy rating taken, he was 9th for driving accuracy in India, 5th in Thailand, 2nd in Malaysia. So as you say, hits an arrow straight. He's a really good fit for this course, and I'd expect him to hopefully run into a place, as I said, at 66-1. I think I was just being greedy, but the fact that you've put him up, that's good.
Okay, 66-1, and you've got no official pick in this event, Dave. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I was hoping to pick Søren Kjeldsen, but he kind of blew his cover, didn't he, at the Masters?
Oh, definitely.
I thought he'd miss the cut at the Masters and we'd get some sort of price here, but obviously he was right, you know, on show there. So Sergio, I mean, it would be no surprise if Sergio won. He's got a phenomenal record at Valderrama, says it's his favourite course. He's won the Volvo Masters here. 10 top 10s in 11 starts at the course. He's also ambassador, which I thought could be a negative, but he won that Castello Masters, the European Tour event, on his actual home course, I think, when he was ambassador. So it's the sort of thing he can cope with. Sometimes with him, maybe it's not a bad thing to have him kind of distracted or mentally, you know, his brain taken up with other stuff, because otherwise he might sort of drift about. But I think I know it's only 5-1, but if he did win, it would absolutely be no surprise at all.
Yeah, I agree with you with Søren Kjeldsen as well. You look at his course form here.
It's very good, isn't it?
Yeah, those two runner-up finishes and that win in the 2008 Volvo Champions event.
Yeah.
Who else did you have a look at, Mike?
Alejandro Canizares is interesting. He was seventh in that, as Dave rightly says, Andalusia Masters, not under Spani that Ramsey was third in. But he was seventh that year, but his price is woeful. What is he, 25 now?
28, yeah.
Yeah, so he's
his home course again, isn't it?
It is, but 28-1, Dave. I think he's won twice maybe on tour. Not a great price for someone who's not a regular winner, I don't think. Rafael Jacquelin's been out of form, but he has good. He's some good Valderrama form to his name. So, what is he? Is he about 200-1?
Rafael Jacquelin,
100-1. Yeah, 100's maybe a little bit skinny, but it wouldn't surprise me. He can bob up at these kind of courses. He's someone I'd have in mind. But other than that, I was struggling a little bit. I'd be interested to see how Thomas Bjorn plays. Be watching him a little bit. I know he's had some decent efforts around this track in the past as well. But it should be interesting, and maybe one of these events where you can play up and running a little bit, see how it's playing, see, you know, it is ultimately 5 years since we've had a tour event here, so see whether the old form rings true. It probably will do, though, I think, ball strikers.
Yeah, I think they might. There've been some tweaks and changes, but you'd expect, as Mike says, ball strikers to triumph here. One more name that I just want to mention before we move on to the heritage. Joost Luiten, I think, will go well. He's 20-1. He's sneaking under the radar in terms of his form. He's playing really good golf, isn't he, at the moment? He's only finished outside the top 15 once in his last seven starts, and he's had four top tens in that run as well. And like Kjeldsen, it's kind of the perfect setup for him. Difficult to see him not performing well, if you know what I mean. I think he'll definitely be top 10, top 15.
I looked, Dave, and didn't he miss the cut the last time he played here? Is that right? But then before that, he'd some decent form.
Yeah, he has had one top 10 finish here, Joost Luiten. That was back in 2010 in the first edition of the Andalusia Masters. Then did miss the cut
the last time he played.
Yeah, in the event Ramsey finished third in.
Yeah, exactly. But the event before that is when he wasn't as good as he is now, because that's a number of years ago. Yeah, it rings out his chance loud and clear, doesn't it?
I suppose Joost Luiten will be. He's definitely on the fringes of that Ryder Cup team, isn't he, at the moment? He'll have an eye on maybe qualifying for the team. It will be tough, though, the Europeans are playing.
Bagging all those points.
Well, Casey's not, won't play in it, will he?
No.
He said that if he won the Masters, he might pick up his European Tour membership again. Mm-hmm. But not if he didn't.
But so. Willett certainly has fired himself almost certainly into the team.
Yeah, he's there, isn't he, now? Joost Luiten, 20-1. Any others you want to mention before we move on, Dave?
No, I think we've covered all the ones I was looking at, yeah.
Okay, let's take a look at the PGA Tour event this week. It is, of course, the RBC Heritage, played at Harbortown, and the betting headed by Jason Day, who is 11-2. Brant Snedeker in the betting at 16-1. Paul Casey is also 16-1. Matt Kuchar is 20s. Kevin Kisner, 25-1. And Matthew Fitzpatrick, 25-1. Zach Johnson, 25-1. And it's 33-1 and bigger the remainder. This is the traditional post-Masters stop at Hilton Head, and it awaits those arriving on the back of the season's first major. And even though the host course will play to a similar yardage as previous years, measuring just under 7,100 yards for this season's edition, that the par 71 has undergone a bit of a facelift since Jim Furyk won with an 18-under par total last year. The Bermuda grass is on their greens now, and they've made a few tweaks, Dave, to a couple of the holes this year.
Yeah, it's one of those ones I wouldn't get spooked by it. I still think this is a tournament where course form, you know, counts for a lot because of the shapes you've got to hit off the tee. You've got to kind of got to work your ball both ways, handle a sort of a bit of wind by the seaside. So it's one of those ones. Yeah, they probably needed to do something after. They don't want to get in too silly scores. But I do always like course form. I'm not really put off by those changes.
I suppose, Mike, stats and trends stack up here. It really is a horses for courses venue.
Yeah, it does look that way, Dave, and it looks like, you know, older players tend to play well because they've got the most experience. So, yeah, Jim Furyk being a kind of identikit winner, wasn't he, last year, ticking all those boxes. But it's another, as we said earlier, accuracy and a bit of hitting the greens, isn't it? It's not a course for long hitters particularly, not a massive advantage there, but experience and shot making will be more important this week.
Yeah, greens in regulation, absolutely key. You look at the last 2 years, the top three all ranked inside the top 10 in greens in regulation, and that's something that has become a trend down the years at Harbour Town. Glad you mentioned experience as well. You look at the roll call of recent winners in the last decade, for instance, they're all players in their 30s or 40s that have not only experience at Harbour Town, but have experience of playing tournament golf.
Yeah, the likes of Brian Gay and people like that again.
Yeah, Cal Peterson and Boo Weekly.
Yeah,
there is an identical player for this venue.
Yeah,
Dave, how many picks have you got?
I've got two.
Okay, I've got one.
I've got one. So
okay,
Dave can go first.
Yeah, lead us off, Mr. Tindall.
Yeah, as we've kind of hit upon, I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel with this event. I don't think it pays to get too clever. So I've just gone for Matt Kuchar at 20-1.
Yeah, I have as well, actually.
Okay. I think I would have been put off by 14s or something like that, but because Jason Day's appeared in the field, thank you, Jason Day, I don't think he'll win. I think he'll sort of trot round in ninth or something. He's made the market a little bit. So I think Kuchar at 20, that's definitely, you know, pull the trigger price on him. It's pretty simple, really. He's got the course form. He won this 2 years ago, and it's an event where we've seen lots of repeat winners. Davis Love won it 5 times. Boo Weekly back-to-back. Furyk was winning for the second time, wasn't he, last year? So Kuchar was winner a couple of years ago. Made a nice defence of it last year when he was fifth. He's got other... I think he's made his last 10 cuts here. Just really suits his eye. Just reading some quotes as well. Maybe it's not something that you immediately think of, but he says you've got to pick and choose and then cash in on the par fives. Well, that's kind of it in his head, and he's 11th in par fives average this year, so that really bodes well for him to do what he thinks you need to do. And I always like someone who's played in the Masters quite well, but not too well. So Furyk,
I wish he'd played a bit better in the Masters.
Yeah. If he didn't do his stuff at Augusta, I think he's got a great chance. He went round in 24th, kind of like a national horse that never got near the front.
No.
And I just thought it was a good enough run. He actually really liked the way he played at Augusta. He just thought it was hard. It was a difficult week.
Is that what he said? I thought his irons were a little bit off, Dave, because I had a little interest in him, and I thought his irons were a bit off. He did play the par fives very well. I think he was quite a few under par in the par fives. I didn't think he's... I thought his approach play was, you know, he's was a little bit low below par for him.
Yeah,
okay. But it was playing tough, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think everyone. It was a battle, wasn't it? A battling week, and I wouldn't want someone who was up there all four rounds and it got to them particularly sort of in their heads mentally. But I think Kuchar, he was never going to win. He was never under that much press. He was just trying to get a decent finish. So that's it, really. He's played well enough this year without looking quite his best. But I think if there is a course where it's going to bring out the best in Matt Kuchar, it's this one. I think 20-1's absolutely fine each way.
I agree. I've gone with Matt Kuchar, and I know that you can look at him statistically this season, and maybe he doesn't rank as highly in the greens in regulation stats or the strokes gained tee to green stats as he usually does. But on all those golf courses where you think these are Matt Kuchar type golf courses, he's played well.
Yeah,
did reasonably well in Austin, which was maybe a slightly more technical golf course. Played well at the Valspar as well. So all those courses you think are Matt Kuchar type courses, he's done well. And the ones that are a little bit longer and that often maybe trouble him, he's not played quite as well. So Matt Kuchar is my... he's my number one this week, and he's my only pick at 20-1. I thought the price was just about right on Matt Kuchar.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. I can see why you both fancy him. He's very high on my list as well, and a player I like. I've gone for a little bit of a speculative one here, though. Chris Kirk, who I tipped last week, who I talked about last week, should I say, was in good form but didn't really, just hasn't warmed to Augusta yet. Doesn't have amazing form here either, but I'm just going to give him a go on this course. He's from nearby Georgia. He's 66-1, I think, Dave, or is he 80-1?
He's 50s.
Oh, has he been caught?
Yeah, he's been nibbled, Chris Kirk, into 50s.
That's bad timing, isn't it? I thought he was 66 at least. When was that cut, Dave? Have a look at that for me. He's played here 5 times and really hasn't pulled up any trees at all, to be fair, missing his cut in the first 2 times round. But I'm just hoping that that experience and learning the course will help him. I've got to say, 50-1 doesn't excite me.
Yeah, no, that's fair comment. That's fair comment. 207.
Yeah. So, yeah, we just missed that. But anyway, I'm going to pretend he's 66-1. Because it's too late to change it. Yeah, Chris Kirk, 150-1. he starts this year aren't amazing. He started the year poorly. But at his best, he's a good tee to green man. He scrambles well at his best.
And he's a winner, isn't he?
And he's a winner.
Yeah.
He's from Georgia. This is not that far away. I couldn't leave him out. I just have a feeling he's coming to the boil. So I'll have a small, and it is a small bet on him.
Yeah, 50-1 at Chris Kirk here with William Hill.
I'm annoyed about that price. Yeah, he's 50s. He's just a bit...
Yeah, on the edge, isn't it?
I didn't spot that. Mm.
Dave, your second selection.
I'm just going to very carefully check his price before I... after. Yes, I haven't refreshed. Kirk 66 on my console, Mike. I'm just refreshing now. There it is. Right, my second pick, 80-1, Scott Brown.
Okay.
He's in very good form at the minute, Scott Brown. He's had 3 top 10s in his last 5 starts, a 10th at the Honda, 7th at the Valspar. So I think if you play well in Florida, it's kind of that southeast corner of America, normally windy, which is good. Then he went to Puerto Rico and finished 5th. He was fancied to go really well there. And sometimes you do see in those lower grade events, people like him go off at, you know, fairly horrible prices, and you go, well, they probably play well, but I can't be having that. But back amongst a sort of decent field this week, I think 80-1 is pretty decent, to be fair, on a player with 3 top 10s in his last 5 starts. He also started really well in Houston, where he shot 65. And he actually had to win in Houston to get to the Masters. Now, for him, that would have been massive, because I found some quotes where he said he actually grew up 200 yards from the front gate at the Masters. It's a big family thing. He used to go there, he reckons, about 15, 20 times. So I think maybe when he shot that 65, he realised, oh my goodness, this might happen. And he fell apart completely after that. 74, 77, 79. But I think there's an element of Masters disappointment in those scores. I don't think you should get too freaked out by that suddenly he can't play anymore. Look back at his previous events, and you know, 3 top 10s before that is just fine. Now, can he do well here? Well, it is on his doorstep. He's moved to South Carolina. He's played the event 3 times, and the one I like, obviously, is his 5th place here, 2014. So he would have landed you the each way money 2 years ago. There's also some good kind of correlating form with the McGladrey, or whatever it's called now, the RSM.
Yeah, the RSM, yeah.
At Sea Island, which is just pretty near, isn't it? It's fairly around the corner from this event. He's had 3 top 20s in that as well. So I think you can kind of start to see on what sort of courses he does well. And he was 4th in that McGladrey in 2013. So on these certain courses that don't need kind of power hitting,
yeah,
I think Scott Brown's a decent runner here. And yeah, he's not won, and it's going to take a bit of doing with some decent names. But I think, you know, you pay your money, you take your price. And 80-1, it's not like he's finished 5th last week or on his last start when he might have been 50s. He is 80-1, so
it's a good price.
Kind of value play, yeah. 80-1, Scott Brown.
Okay, 80-1, Scott Brown.
That's
Mike,
all our picks, is it? Yeah, that's it for me, Dave. Who'd you've picked out of the favourites? Who catches your eye there, guys?
I've gone with Matt Kuchar. He's the one that I like at the top end of the market. The others that I had on my mind, Ian Poulter, I think could go well this week.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. He's 66-1. If we don't know if the Danny Willett win is going to inspire any of the other Englishmen, but I think it will give Poulter a kick up the backside.
Rounds two and three were poor,
but he shot two under par rounds around Augusta, and not many players that finished in his position managed to shoot two under par rounds. He did play well, solid in Puerto Rico when finishing in a tie for third, and he's 5 from 5 in terms of cuts made at Harbortown as well, his sort of track. So Poulter was one, and Danny Lee, who impressed for a couple of rounds at Augusta. He's only had two starts here, Danny Lee, so a little bit inexperienced around the venue. I've got a sneaky feeling he'll do well, though. He drives the ball very accurately, Danny Lee, so he's 50-1. So Poulter and Lee were the two that came closest for me, Mike.
I think Ernie Els has been putting well. I fancy his chances.
That was one of the saddest things to see last week, wasn't it?
Strange.
I mean, that 7-putt, was it 6 or 7-putt on the first
200-1, do we?
Ernie Els.
No, joking apart, we don't want to see that.
No,
but a player that did that came into my head because I was just about to say that Brandon Grace, who ended up being a poor pick last week for me because I don't think Augusta is his track, it might never be, but he was top 10 here in his debut on the track last year, and he has been in decent form, so I think he might go quite well. A Scottish man, Russell Knox, could go well. He ticks a lot of the criteria. He did cross my mind, but he's been cut into 40. I think he might have been 50s earlier on. They were both on my mind. Jason Kokrak is a bit in and out. He's either playing really well or messing up. He was thereabouts.
Dave, who did you like away from your two selections of Kuchar and Brown?
I thought one of you two would have put up Russell Henley, actually, just on this.
He's 40-1.
Yeah, 40-1's a bit short, isn't it?
If he'd have been 66 or 80s, I would have put him up, to be fair. But 40s, I just thought, you know, he's got mixed course and current form. He's, again, a bit like I just said about Kokrak, he's either playing brilliantly or rubbish. So you can take a chance at 80s, can't you? But 40, I think I'll let him see how he's going running. If he's going really well, I think he's a great player, but real talent. But 40, I nearly fell off my seat when I saw 40s.
it's a bit odd, isn't it, that the current Open champion who's won loads of events in America, including the Masters, is the same price as Matt Fitzpatrick. I'm talking about Zach Johnson, obviously.
That's weird, isn't it?
25-1.
Fitzpatrick is just underpriced, isn't he?
He's terribly underpriced this week. Doesn't mean he's not a great
Kevin prospect. Kister obviously was runner-up in this last year.
I thought Dave might have picked him. He used to be one of your favourites.
Yeah, he was close for me. Just preferred Q. I didn't want two really short price
two players
runners
with an MK.
Yeah. So
I've gone with
Kuchar instead of Kisner, but I could see Kisner playing well again.
Yeah, it's his sort of venue, isn't it? Definitely. I mean Rory Sabatini and Aaron Badley, if you really wanted crazy long shots, have both got good course form. But Badley's actually showing signs of coming back to form. Sabatini less so, but Sabatini's 200-1. He has played well here in the past. If you really wanted to roll the dice, 150s Badley. He'd be my best outsider, Aaron Badley.
With Fitzpatrick, just on one final point on Fitzpatrick, it's the perfect storm, isn't it, in terms of him being underpriced this week because of the final round 67 at Augusta, which was captured by the TV screens.
Yeah.
The fact that he's tweeting that this is his favourite track.
Yeah.
And then on debut as US amateur champion, finished 23rd here a couple of years ago. So it really is
Sheffield
the perfect...
Well.
Yeah, and he's from Sheffield. So it's the perfect storm for Fitzpatrick.
I thought, actually, one player who I thought one of you might have picked, because I know you're both liking, Paul Casey, who played very well at the Masters.
He's short, though, isn't he? 16-1 this week.
He's only won once in America, so 16-1 put me off.
Yeah. Okay, fair rationale. I would absolutely endorse that. He's not, for me, he's not a player to back. A bit like Bubba Watson, he's not a player to back, I've realised, at a very short price. Casey's one of those as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
You want to be on him at a bigger price, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
He was put well price, wasn't he, in the Masters? What was he for the Masters? About 66?
Yeah, 66-ish.
Yeah. And he landed it there. Yeah, I'd rather back him bigger price in a big event.
Yeah, I'd rather back him on a more open... I know he's played really well here, hasn't he, Paul Casey?
Yeah, he's good course form.
I'd rather back him on a more open track, I think, as well. It's quite a tight course this, and he might not be pulling driver as much as you'd expect. Jason Day might only hit driver on a couple of holes all week. this week.
Bit of a surprise to see Jason Day here for me with his injury problems, and then would you share that? Or?
Yeah, I think he'll be one of the least popular favourites of the season. I think, not to say he can't win, Dave, but I think he's one of those players that if you were opposing favourites in events, he'd be one that I definitely think is opposable this week.
Yeah, well, I dwelt on him for all of about half a second and thought no.
Yeah. Just doesn't seem like a Jason Day type venue at all, does it?
I'm not saying he'll do bad, but I just think he'll come like 8th or 9th or 10th or something. Just think it negates too many of his powers.
Yeah. Okay, chaps, let's recap the selections then. Dave, your picks this week?
Yes, I'm going to go 1.5 points each way, Matt Kuchar at 20s.
Confident.
In the RBC Heritage. And then a point each way, Scott Brown at 80-1 in the same event.
Okay. I'm going with Gregory Havre, point each way at 66-1 in the Open de España. And point each way, Matt Kuchar, RBC Heritage at 20s.
Yeah, I'll go half a point each way, Chris Kirk at 50-1.
I thought you were going to try it again.
Well, yeah, what? Up his price. Yeah. And Richie Ramsey. I think I fancy him to give a good account, so I'm going to go point each way on him at 66.
Very good. Thank you, chaps. You can follow us all on Twitter, please do. At D Kellner, at M Grenham, at Dave Tindall Golf. Just one final question. Who's the player you don't want to win this week, Mike?
Tap your shoulder there. Well, Russell Henley would be annoying if I don't back him in running, because he was on my mind. Yeah, I think him probably. Yeah,
I think Ian Poulter came closest for me, so I'll go with Poults in the Heritage. And Dave, the player you don't want to win?
Yeah, probably Kjeldsen, I think. I wanted to back him, but I couldn't because of the price, 14s.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Remember, you can download this via audioboom.com. Just type in William Hill. You can get us on iTunes as well.
Yeah, I'll be looking to... I don't know about you guys, Davids, but I definitely will have a little betting running. I'm going to have a bet on the Champions Tour, so Twitter as well. It's an interesting Champions Tour event, so...
And Bernard Langer playing in it.
Bernard Langer is playing, Dave. Why would you stand on that? He's a short price favourite.
Given that he won the week after he missed that putt in the Ryder Cup, he's obviously made of incredible mental steel, so he'll probably win.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
unbelievable seeing him up there, wasn't it?
It was. He was fantastic for three rounds. The final round went a bit wrong. I think even for Bernard Langer, I'm going to oppose him this week, but him and Jimenez are ever so strong at the top market. But I'm just going to go for I've got a couple of players in mind that have good course form, so... I'm definitely going to have a bet in that event. Jimenez. I'd actually back Jimenez before Langer this week.
Okay.
I think Langer will definitely be placed. But that's a grueling 4 days for a
58, I think he is now, yeah.
But as Dave T says, if anyone can do it at that age, it is him.
He's unbelievable. He's made of iron.
Anyone
else,
you can forget them totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a fantastic... he's a fantastic
individual. I loved hearing Monty talk about him because he was one of Monty's adversaries, wasn't he, in the when they were playing at the top of the game, and he's almost in awe of him, isn't he, Monty?
Yeah.
And you think about how many Order of Merit titles Monty won. For him to have that much respect for Bernard Langer spoke volumes, I thought, last week.
He was amazing there, Augusta, for his age. Absolutely outstanding, and he's winning regularly on the Champions Tour still, so yeah, great player.
At D Kellner, at M Grenham, at Dave Tindall Golf to follow us on Twitter. Do check out Mike's tips in the Champions Tour as well. Thank you for listening to the podcast, folks. Make sure you get your bets on here with William Hill for the Open de España and the Heritage, and we'll speak again next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.